The Supreme Court reconsiders affirmative action in higher education today. Some members of the conservative supermajority have signaled they are ready to overturn decades of precedent. Here's NPR Legal Affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg.
In 1978, Justice Lewis Powell set out the baseline for what constitutes permissible affirmative action today. Citing Harvard University as the model, he said that in evaluating applicants for admission, race could not be the determinative factor, but could be one of many factors.
Awareness of the need for diversity means only that in choosing among thousands of academically qualified applicants, the committee, with a number of criteria in mind, pays some attention to the distribution that should be made among many types and categories of students.
In a series of cases since then, the court has more or less stuck to that principle, adding that each applicant must be evaluated in an individual and holistic way. But today, Harvard's admission system is itself under the judicial microscope, along with the affirmative action program at the University of North Carolina, which until the 1950s didn't accept any black applicants. The two cases overlap, but ultimately at the heart of both is the same principle. What constitutes racial discrimination? On one side is Students for Fair Admissions, SFA, an organization founded by legal activist Edward Blum, who for decades has fought what he sees as racial preferences in school admissions.
What is happening on college campuses today is that applicants are treated differently because of their race and ethnicity. Some are given thumbs up, some are given thumbs down.
On the other side, Harvard and UNC contend that in addition to academic excellence, they aim for a student body that's demographically diverse and that they need not ignore a candidate's race any more than they do a candidate's home state, national origin, family background, or special achievements. The individual holistic approach to college admissions has been used by a huge variety of colleges, large and small, including the U.S. military academies and 57 Catholic colleges and universities that have filed a brief endorsing affirmative action programs. That said, the Supreme Court's new conservative supermajority presents a daunting legal mountain for UNC and Harvard to climb. That's why the academic institutions are making some new arguments, focused on the conservative doctrine of original intent. The court's newest member, Ketanji Brown Jackson, pointed to that history in a different case about race last month.
When I drilled down to that level of analysis, it became clear to me that the framers themselves adopted the Equal Protection Clause in a race-conscious way. I don't think that the historical record establishes that the founders believed that race neutrality or race blindness was required.
Indeed, Harvard and UNC point to colorblind language that was originally proposed for the 14th Amendment and rejected by Congress. And they note that the same Congress that passed the 14th Amendment also adopted race-conscious laws giving special benefits to African Americans in areas from education to land distribution. SFA's Blum counters that the whole idea of the 14th Amendment was colorblindness, and he repeatedly cites the court's 1954 Brown v. Board of Education case declaring racial segregation of public schools unconstitutional.
The Constitution and our civil rights laws forbid the consideration of race in higher education.
Harvard's co-counsel William Lee replies that the court's 1954 schools case dealt with the exclusion of students based solely on their race, not with actions aimed at bringing the races together.
The use of Brown is really turning things on its head.
SFA's lawsuit against Harvard is based in significant part on the charge that Harvard discriminates against Asian Americans, who on average have better board scores and grades than any other ethnic or racial group, including whites. Blum points to Harvard's infamous history of limiting the number of Jews by imposing a Jewish quota until the early 1960s.
Today, at Harvard, Asians are the new Jews.
SFA's Blum's initial filings in the case relied heavily on the work of Berkeley professor Jerome Carabell and his book about Jewish quotas at Harvard, Yale, and Princeton. But Carabell disputes Blum's thesis, noting that the intended results of the Jewish quotas was to send the number of Jews on those campuses spiraling downward.
Nothing like that has happened. And in fact, the Asian American enrollments have constantly risen. And so right now we're in a situation where the entering class at Harvard is 28% Asian American.
Harvard relies heavily on the fact that SFA's charges of discrimination were tested in court during a 15-day trial in which Harvard's dean and members of the admissions committee were subjected to cross-examination, and hundreds of thousands of emails were produced for examination. The conclusion, upheld by the appeals court, was that there was, quote, no evidence of discrimination against Asian Americans. A federal judge in North Carolina reached a similar conclusion for UNC. The Supreme Court's eventual decision in these two cases could have enormous ripple effects beyond the question of college admissions. Harvard's co-counsel Lee notes that if the court repudiates affirmative action in college admissions, similar policies in employment could be next.
A decision in which we were to lose dispositively is going to open up a Pandora's box across the country and across institutions and industries.
For Edward Bloom, this is not a new question. Before this fight, he engineered a successful challenge to the Voting Rights Act. When asked what's next on his agenda, he was coy.
I don't have anything planned. I'm 70 years old. I am getting close to the end of my tether.
But last year, he formed a new organization, which has already filed two lawsuits to challenge diversity goals on corporate boards. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.